Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloud and Out podcast. My name is Michael.
And my name is Andreas.
We are brothers and freelancers focusing on Amazon Web Services. We do technical coaching, for example, for teams that start their journey with AWS, and infrastructure bootstrapping, typically based on our infrastructure's code templates for our clients worldwide. Every other week, we discuss a topic related to AWS here in this podcast. One of us prepares the topic, which is not known to the other one. And today, I have no clue what the topic is. So, Andreas, let's reveal the topic. So, what are you going to talk about today?
So, Michael, today I have something special. So, this is another part of our review service, where we deeply dive into newish AWS services and look behind the scenes and try to find out if this is a useful service to use already, or if it's maybe time to just wait a little bit and see what evolves there. And what I reviewed the last 2 weeks is AWS App Mesh, a service mesh for EC2, ECS, and AKS.
Okay, so that sounds great. So service reviews are one of our most popular pieces of content that we create. So I'm looking forward to that, Andreas. So before we start, this is episode number 26, and we are recording this on August 25 in 2020. And we have a short announcement to make before we start. Last week, we released chapter 3 of our video course, Rapid Docker on AWS. So Rapid Docker on AWS is one of the fastest way for you to learn how to Dockerize your application and spin it up in AWS in an environment that is scalable, fault tolerant, and in general, very low effort to operate. So if you're interested in this, check it out. And chapter 3 is about like deep dives into all the components of the architecture. So the application load balancer, Aurora serverless as the database. And we look into Fargate, we look into how you debug and look at your logs, and we check out how to do cron jobs, and we enable HTTPS and all kinds of stuff. So chapter 3 is really packed with content, and I hope you check it out. We will add the link to the book and to the video course in the show notes. So Andreas, I guess we can start. So I have to say that I was looking into App Mesh as well a couple of weeks ago. So I'm interested in what you figured out. So I was looking at it from the perspective of how to operate it in an AWS organization with shared like multiple accounts and how to share the mesh and things like this. And so, I'm really looking forward to your insights. So let's get started, Andreas.
Yeah, okay. So maybe let's start a little bit with the history of AWS App Mesh. So AWS announced App Mesh in November 2018. So this was probably around the reInvent. And it is generally available since March 2019. So more than a year now. And that's typically a good time to review a service. It's not brand new anymore, but it's still typically not a totally mature service already. So it's something in between, and that is why I think those reviews that we're doing are interested. So the review focuses on the technical details, and it also looks into common pitfalls when using the service. And yeah, this is what this review of AWS App Mesh will be about as well. Okay. So first of all, Michael, I don't know if you noticed that as well, but on every online conference, in a lot of blog posts, the term service mesh is quite popular those days. So it's very en vogue to operate your microservice architecture in a service mesh.
Yeah, that's true. So that term is used a lot at the moment. So maybe we start with describing what actually is a service mesh, Andreas. So how would you describe this to someone who never heard about a service mesh?
Yeah. So let me start with that. So a service mesh is built for microservice architectures. So basically you split down your big application, your big problem into small chunks, and you deploy services as a distributed system. and now you have a bunch of problems. So of course you solve one problem, but you have a bunch of problems that you have to solve. You need service discovery, because service A somewhere needs to know how to talk to service B. Because service B can be, I don't know, 1 or 2 or 100 containers or whatever, and the service A needs to know, how do I connect to the service? Then you need to do load balancing. So you need to send the request to a specific service and distribute the load on multiple machines, multiple containers. So it is helpful if you do that in a clever way with an algorithm that takes into consideration the load of the other service or the latency to other services and stuff like that, maybe even availability zones and stuff like that. Then, of course, fault tolerance is important, because the different services in a microservice architecture, they can fail in different ways. So there can be network problems, there could be a deployment that is going on for a specific service which might be broken. So you need to build in fault tolerance into that whole thing. So you need to detect failures, you need to mitigate problems, stuff like circuit breakers, retries, and all that stuff is something you need to think about in a microservice world. And then another problem is, I talked about it already, is deployments. So one big advantage of a microservice architecture is that you can deploy the services individually without affecting the whole thing. So you need to find out, how can I do zero downtime deployments? How can I do blue-green deployments, canary deployments, stuff like that? That's another challenge. One thing that you get if you have, let's say, 30, 50 services, you have the problem, when things go wrong, how do you find out what's basically going wrong? Because a request that comes in from a user might travel through multiple services, and you now need to find out, you need to trace that request, you need to get metrics from all these services to find out when there is a problem in your whole system, log messages and so on. And last but not least, security is a problem as well, because those services now communicate with each other. So you need authentication, authorization between services. You need to encrypt the data in transit over the network. So you need certificates, need to update a certificate after it's been revoked or invalid, stuff like that. So basically, service discovery, load balancing, fault tolerance, deployments, observability, security, those are all challenges in a microservice architecture, even more than they have before in the old world where we had a single application. Okay, so the service mesh, the idea behind that is it tries to solve all those problems, and that's basically the idea. So where does the term service mesh come from? I think it comes from the term mesh network. So a mesh network is a network topology where nodes connect directly to each other. So there is no intermediate in between that routes network traffic. The different nodes connect directly to each other, and they do so by discovering the network, by discovering their peers, by getting information about the whole system and so on. So they self-organize, they self-configure. And by doing that, you don't have a single point of failure in your system. All those nodes in the mesh network find out what to do on their own. And a service mesh is basically the translation of that idea on the application layer of a microservice architecture. That's how I would describe what a service mesh is.
Okay, and in general, we can say the service mesh tries to accomplish this without the load balancer. So, I mean, typically AWS architectures, a lot of these things that you discussed are done by the load balancer. And so now we get rid of that component, at least for the inter-service communication. We might still need it for end users, but within the service mesh, there is no central authority needed anymore.
Yeah, so one aspect is that direct connectivity between the service nodes. So which means you don't want to have a load balancer or something in between, because you have an additional network hop if you use an application load balancer, for example. So you try to avoid that to keep the latencies to a minimum. Yes, absolutely. So you don't want to have that central authority that is often the application load balancer that knows all about the system. You want to have that moving that to the network, to the mesh level.
Okay, I see. And I also see why this is interesting and why this is an appealing idea. So, so let's dive into the implementation. So my understanding is the implementation is AWS App Mesh, right?
Yeah, so App Mesh is a service mesh. So App Mesh is one implementation. There are other popular service mesh implementations. You might have heard about Istio, Linkerd, Console. So there are a bunch of open source projects out there, mostly coming from the Kubernetes ecosystem. And App Mesh is the implementation or a service provided by AWS. It works nowadays with ECS, AKS, and also EC2 instances. So you can have the container workloads on ECS or AKS, and even stuff running on EC2 instances can be part of an App Mesh. So yeah, that's it. So how does App Mesh work? So first of all, you can think about App Mesh in the following way. App Mesh at the moment utilizes Envoy. Envoy is a layer 7 proxy, and yeah, it's basically a very advanced layer 7 proxy that is designed for service-oriented architectures, which says it's designed for microservice architectures. And the idea is that you can all the logic for the service-to-service communication is in Envoy. So Envoy does service discovery, Envoy does load balancing, Envoy does fault tolerance by doing retries, circuit breakers, and so on. It does the TLS encryption and so on. So this is all bundled into Envoy. And this is an open source project. If I remember it correctly, it comes from Uber. So that is what App Mesh is built on.
Yeah, and I think like one thing that once I understood it, it made a lot of sense to me is that this is not only about ingress traffic. So it's not like a load balancer only accepting connections. You use this Envoy proxy also for egress traffic. So if you make a request to another service, you actually make the request to your local Envoy proxy, and this proxy then forwards it to the other service. And this is also how they implement all the like the retry logic and things like this, because the proxy itself actually does the retries to the other side. So as soon as I understood this, it made a lot of more sense, because then it's actually more powerful than an application load balancer, because the application load balancer only works in the ingress. For ingress traffic,
correct. Yeah, and I made a mistake. It's not Uber, it's Lyft. So
same kind.
So they started that project, and yeah, absolutely. It's so Envoy itself can be used for all kinds of proxy scenarios. So and in the way the App Mesh uses it is for ingress and for egress traffic, exactly. In that scenario, it's important to have it for egress traffic, because there you need the service discovery part and all that. The ingress part is mostly for observability and monitoring. So also, of course, for the TLS encryption as well. So yeah, it works on both sides. That's correct.
Yeah, and also like this is just like I just want to like add some things that I learned, so maybe they are useful for others. So why is Envoy such a thing? So why don't they just use Nginx? And my understanding is that Envoy was one of the first proxies where you really could reconfigure the whole thing on the fly. So you can really change the configuration of this thing without interrupting any connections. And that's why Envoy is such a big deal here from the technology perspective. And my understanding is that you could, at least today, you could do most of this stuff with Nginx. But because of Envoy was kind of the first who really was completely dynamic configurable, they kind of are settled in this service mesh space. So yeah, that's also interesting.
Yeah, that's a very good note, Michael, because that's also pointing to the second part of App Mesh. So one is you deploy Envoy as a sidecar container, and then App Mesh provides a backend. So the App Mesh service basically is nothing more than a backend that Envoy fetches its configuration from. So basically what App Mesh is doing is you do some configuration, you configure your mesh, and we will talk about that in a minute. And then they provide an endpoint where Envoy can fetch or stream, what they say, that information from. So the whole Envoy configuration is provided by App Mesh, by the service backend that AWS provides. So that is basically how you can think about the service. So it's Envoy that you run in your pods, your containers, tasks, or on your EC2 instances. And then there's that backend where it fetches its configuration from. And besides that, App Mesh integrates with some AWS services, for example, Cloud Map, the Certificate Manager, and there's also some pre-built ways on how to integrate with CloudWatch and X-Ray as well. So that is what we will talk about in this review as well. But mainly, it's that Envoy, Container, Sidecar, and the App Mesh backend that provides the configuration for that.
Okay, and the sidecar, like the Docker images, is provided by AWS. So it's not the like the plain Envoy. It's something like on top.
Yeah, I had a look into the Docker image that they provide. It's basically it's an Envoy installation in a Docker image, and then they have a bash script that puts together the initial configuration file. Basically, that's more or less what they provide. But they update and maintain and test that Envoy image together with the App Mesh backend. So that's what you get. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they also promise to do security updates and stuff like that on that. So yeah.
Okay. But that's then my problem to kind of roll out this new image version if there's security issues.
Yes, that's something we will talk about in a minute, because I think that is a major thing here. Yeah. Before we do that, I want to talk a little bit. So what we talked about, so we have to deploy Envoy to each task, if you do ECS, or each pod, if you do AKS, or to each EC2 instance. And then the Envoy containers proxying outbound and inbound requests. And yeah, the magic happens basically there. Next I want to introduce the basic concepts of App Mesh. So you can think about it. This is another layer of abstraction on top of everything that we have. So we have a lot of layers of abstraction those days. So you have your container layer already, you have your cluster manager with ECS, AKS, and now on top of that, you have additional layer, which is the service mesh. And the service mesh consists of a few components that we need to talk about. So first of all, when you want to use App Mesh, you need to create what is called a service mesh. So the service mesh is the logical boundary of your microservice environment. So all the microservices that you want to deploy that need to talk to each other, they need to be part of the same service mesh. That's the first term we need to talk about. Then in the service mesh, you can add virtual services. A virtual services is the abstract representation. That's why they call it virtual service. The abstract representation of a service. For example, you will create a virtual service in App Mesh for every ECS service that you have created. Yeah? So that is what you need here. The next thing is the virtual service can then point directly to a virtual node. A virtual node is basically the target for requests and connections. So when we think about application load balancer terms, this is what you would call maybe a target group. Yeah. The virtual node is oftentimes an ECS service or an EKS service, yeah, where you have multiple containers that are behind them. Optionally, you can have a virtual router in place, and that can send requests that are coming in for the same service to different virtual nodes, for example, with path-based routing, all that stuff. So basically, you can do rules here that route the traffic to different virtual nodes. That can be used, for example, to split part of the service to different nodes or something. And the last thing here is, this is kind of new, there's also a virtual gateway. A virtual gateway is an ingress gateway to your service mesh. So this allows resources from the outside to connect to a service inside the mesh. Because everyone that is not part of the mesh basically first doesn't know about anything. But you can have a virtual gateway. This is basically an Envoy proxy as well. And you deploy that as, for example, as part of an ECS service. And then this gets the request from the outside and then forwards it to a virtual service. So this is something that is in place now. So in theory, you don't need an application load balancer even for ingress traffic to your service mesh anymore. You can do it, but you don't have to.
Yeah, okay, I see. So basically, I just want to make a bad joke. So we are. I'm very happy that they haven't like they called it virtual node and not virtual machine to increase confusion here anymore. But yeah, okay, we have lots of virtual stuff in our service mesh. But if you want to like make this real, then it is an ECS service.
Who knew is this virtual? Yeah. I don't know. It's okay. It's really strange. I watched a reInvent talk, and someone from the AppMesh team said they chose to add virtual as a prefix, so to avoid confusion with other service terms. I don't know if it's really helping that much, but yeah, they tried. Okay, so that's how it is. Yeah, so it adds another layer of abstraction and everything. That is, I think, what is important. And okay, so Michael, I hope you got a little bit of an idea about how AppMesh works, but next I want to take you on a journey. So how would you set up AppMesh for ECS? So I just want to go very briefly through the steps that are needed to get everything up and running. So, okay, the first layer of abstraction is basically the good old AWS basics. So you need a VPC setup. Yeah, you need a network setup, because all those containers or virtual machines, they still run in a network. They need to be able to communicate with each other. So you need to have subnets, security groups in place that allow communication between all parts of your microservice architecture. Then next, with ECS, you need what we are used to. You need an ECS cluster. You need an ECS service, the task definition, everything. Then AppMesh for ECS requires CloudMap. So CloudMap is the service discovery that you can use with ECS. So something that comes already with Kubernetes or AKS built in is something you can have as an additional configuration for ECS as well. With CloudMap, the ECS service will register the containers or the tasks not on an application load balancer, but with an DNS-based service discovery. That's basically behind it. And CloudMap also has an API for service discovery, and that's what is probably used here. I don't know exactly, but that's what I assume. So CloudMap is the service discovery that you need to configure for AppMesh to be able to detect or to discover your service, basically. Then optionally, you will use the AWS Amazon Certificate Manager. So this is something you can use if you want to have TLS encryption between all services in your mesh. And it will use the certificate manager to on the fly create and update certificates out of the box. And then on top of that, everything, you need to configure app mesh. So what we talked about, you need to configure a service mesh, a virtual service, a virtual node. That's the minimum configuration that you need to do to get everything running. And on top of that, you need to add the sidecar containers so that everything is running. So you need to add a sidecar container, the Envoy proxy. So AWS has a pre-built image to do so that you need to add to your ECS service or your ECS task definition. You probably also want to deploy the CloudWatch agent as a sidecar container and the X-ray daemon, because otherwise you don't have any observability functionality. But if you really want to use all features, you deploy three additional sidecar containers to each and every ECS service in your cluster.
Sorry, yeah, that gets like, I mean, I know that like concept of sidecars everywhere, but it's really like if you use things like Fargate, you can really, I mean, if you calculate the costs that are associated with that, it really adds up. So I'm not sure what's the minimum like resources that I need to provision for CloudWatch agent and X-ray daemon, but still, I mean, for every task that we have, you add some extra money just to get metrics and tracing out of it. So that's not the most like cheap way of doing it. Yeah.
No, definitely not. So I think it's hard to get any information on how much CPU and memory you need to provision for those sidecar containers. Because I think that will heavily depend on the number of requests that go through the system. But I also think, this is something you need to consider when choosing AppMesh. I think it's hard to calculate That's why I haven't done it for the review. But I think, yeah, that's definitely something you should test before deploying that in a very big fashion. Yeah, so, and also, you can now, if you go through that journey, so what needs to be configured and what needs to be set up, you can already think of how much time you will need to get everything running. So it took me really many, many hours to get a simple example up and running. So I did it with CloudFormation, just used our pre-built templates to get the basics done. But then for getting CloudMap together with App Mesh and everything in place, it took really long time to get through all that concept and then to configure all them correctly. So yeah, that was really a lot of work. It's, in my opinion, very complicated to use because of those many layers of abstraction. Yeah, and maybe something that is a note here, the documentation that comes with App Mesh is not very helpful. So there is a lot of documentation missing, in my opinion, about the basics. So how does everything work in detail? This is just missing. They have a lot of documentation that says how I click through the management console to create a service mesh, but that is completely useless in my point of view, because that is something I can figure out on my own. But how does the Envoy sidecar work in detail? How does it proxy requests? Which ports do I need to attach to my load balancer for ingress traffic and such things? This documentation is completely missing. And luckily there is one App Mesh example from a technical evangelist that you can have a look at. So you can have a little, this is the only open example that I could find, where you could just have a little bit of a look how he did implement everything. So this was really a lot of work, and the documentation was almost not existent on that. Okay, but yeah, so that's how you set up App Mesh. And of course, if you have been through the process, you know how everything works, and then it gets easier. Now, if I do it a second time, it's probably not that big of a deal, but the first time was a lot of work.
Okay, so basically, if you want to start with App Mesh, then you should kind of add some time to figure everything out to your planning session. So otherwise, you will be lost in the end and miss the deadline.
And I think if you don't know the container orchestration layer, the container cluster underneath, if you do not know that very well, it also will be very, very hard to get up and running with App Mesh. So if that is what you will struggle, then it's probably too much. So get the basics for ECS and AKS, and then learn how to do App Mesh. That's what I would suggest.
Yeah, I could also imagine, on the VPC layer, so I imagine that security groups need to be very open here, because, you don't know the ports up front, things like this. You also have to understand how VPCs work, actually, to otherwise you will just, if you just open the wrong port and it's not working, you will not really get good data out of Envoy why it's not working. It's just the security group is blocking the traffic, but you will not see that in the Envoy logs.
Of course, it's IAM policies as well, as you can imagine, for all that, but yeah. Yeah, but let me dive into the review. So now I think we have an overview of how App Mesh works. I haven't done a walkthrough for AKS because it took me so much time to get everything working with ECS already. But I expect it to be similar, complicated, actually. What I want to talk about next is the things that are important to know about the service that are maybe not mentioned on the AWS marketing pages. And that's what I want to go through next. So I think there's a fundamental problem with App Mesh. And Michael, you already started talking about a little bit and I interrupted you. So the thing here is that it's not really true that the service is fully managed by AWS, because what's managed by AWS is they manage the API, the configuration, and the Envoy endpoint to fetch the configuration from. So basically the control plane in AWS terms is managed by AWS. But then you need to deploy the Envoy sidecar container, maybe even CloudWatch and X-Ray, And of course, that's then in your responsibility. Those containers are part of your infrastructure, and you are responsible to provide enough CPU and memory and network resources to monitor them, to update them if there is a new security fix available or something. So I think that is a big issue here. So usually when we use AWS or for example with ECS, you have a load balancer, you have an ECS service, you have Fargate. There's not much that is left for us to operate, right? But here it gets a little bit different. And imagine if in production the service mesh is not working correctly. So let's assume some requests are not coming through. How do you debug that problem? So you can have a look into Envoy. Maybe the configuration is wrong. How can AWS support help with that problem if they can't look into what's going on in your Envoy sidecar containers and so on? So I think we have a service here that I would be very careful using, because it's not really a fully managed service, and you have a lot of things that can go wrong in your own responsibility, and that also AWS cannot monitor and react to automatically. So I think that is definitely an issue. And not to mention that you also have to pay for the resources that you need to operate all these sidecar containers. So that would be an interesting calculation. Is an application load balancer cheaper than adding all these additional sidecar containers to my infrastructure? Yeah, that's probably hard to calculate, but at least something you should consider. So I think for the future, so I always try to look a little bit, how can that service evolve in the future? So I think for the future, these Envoy proxy sidecars need to go away when using that service. So somehow AWS needs to find a way to, I don't know, deploy those sidecar containers transparently. For example, with Fargate, in theory, they could do some magic and deploy those proxies on themselves. Or I don't know, maybe move it to the network layer or something. But I think with those sidecar containers that you have to run in your infrastructure, the service is a little bit, this is a little bit of a warning sign, I would say, when using that service. Okay, Michael, so this is the first note on App Mesh. Then next, I want to talk about observability, or if you're more old school, you might call it monitoring of your microservices. So App Mesh promises end-to-end visibility for microservices. That's basically what's on their marketing site. So App Mesh promises to provide metrics, logs, traces, and to do so, it integrates with CloudWatch and X-Ray. So it integrates with CloudWatch logs. So you can use that to collect access logs, basically, or it's not only access log, it's basically logs for the incoming and outgoing requests. You can enable CloudWatch metrics, or let's say metrics in general, to get insights in the health of each and every service in your mesh. And you can also use X-Ray to record and analyze traces. So to be able to trace follow the trace of a request through the whole system, for example. So what I was wondering about when I started everything, ECS was running, service was running, App Mesh was running. I thought it also worked. It's also hard to say if App Mesh is really working, because it would also work if you remove App Mesh, because you have Cloud Map and DNS-based service discovery in place. So it's really hard to say if it goes through the mesh network or not, but that's a side note. So I was trying to find those CloudWatch metrics, those X-Ray data, and I noticed, by default, there's none of that. So if you just create everything, follow the documentation, all that is missing. So you don't get any metrics, you don't get any traces. That's something you have to enable manually. It's not enabled or available by default. And as I said, you have to deploy two additional sidecar containers to get that working. So you need an X-Ray agent and a CloudWatch agent running to get that working. So that is what I then discovered. Okay, I need to spin up additional sidecar containers and some configuration. Okay, and after doing that, X-Ray traces show up in X-Ray. So I don't know if you have ever worked with X-Ray, So X-Ray is an application monitoring service. So basically, it collects information that are relevant for tracing a request. So you get latencies, sometimes even to your databases with the SQL queries and so on. So that is what you get with X-Ray. Or CloudWatch metrics, metrics about number of requests, latencies, and so on. So this was showing up after I enabled X-Ray and the CloudWatch metrics collection.
Okay, so yes, I worked with X-Ray before, so I actually use it in Marwood, Andreas. I think you already know that.
Yes.
So I think 2 years or so ago, we used it to debug some issues there. Okay, but I can imagine how it looks like. So that makes sense. Okay, so X-Ray is for tracing the request kind of. So the logs, with access logs, you mean some a load balancer access log, but also for egress, right?
Yeah, it's basically similar to the logs that you get from an application load balancer, just every request that goes in and out. Yeah.
Okay, so then we have one thing left, the CloudWatch metrics. So what kind of metrics do I get here besides what I already have from the ECS service?
Yeah, so the CloudWatch metrics, this was really an unpleasant surprise because I enabled them. And it seems how this works is Envoy has an statsd endpoint, and then the CloudWatch agent just collects all the information from that endpoint and sends it to CloudWatch. And the problem here is, this is again, I think it's correlated to what we talked before, this is not really a fully managed service. It's a container running in your infrastructure. And your container in your infrastructure can publish CloudWatch metrics only as a so-called custom metric. Because we are not allowed to add any metrics in the AWS namespace, right? So, what that is doing is they just create CloudWatch custom metrics. And I noticed after a few hours, because it always takes a while until everything shows up, that in my very simple example, I just had two services in my mesh, a front-end and a back-end. This was just my simple example that I deployed. This setup created more than 500 custom CloudWatch metrics. So, Michael, do you know what a custom metric costs per month?
So I certainly know that they are expensive because I also kind of experienced something similar, but not with AppMesh. But I think they are maybe, I don't know. What's the current price? I don't know.
It's 30 cents per month per metric. Okay. So 500 metrics will cost about $150 per month. So this is quite a lot, I would say, to monitor two simple services. So far I could not find a way to configure that it does not really record all of those metrics that Envoy provides. So Envoy just provides a really huge number of metrics. So the connection count, the failure count, the latencies, and in all different combinations for egress and ingress in many different variants. So it's probably definitely interesting to find the right metric in there for your problem that you are trying to solve, which probably also might not be that easy to find the relevant metric in 500 metrics, but yeah, let's see. But I think, the costs here are really a showstopper, so I don't want to deploy something that just costs me more than $100 only for the custom metrics. And by the way, it's not only the monthly cost per metric, you also pay for each API request to CloudWatch as well. On top of that, I haven't calculated that in already, so that is adding up even more. So
I can imagine that you set up AppMesh and then you have 50 or 100 services running, and at some point in time someone wants to have the metrics, and then some poor engineer turns on the other side car, and then there's a surprise at the end of the month when they have to pay their CloudWatch bill.
I tried to figure out how to maybe filter the metrics that are going to CloudWatch, but I could not find anything in the documentation. I asked support, AWS support for help. So far, I didn't get any help with that. So maybe there is a way, but I couldn't find it. When you run on Kubernetes, if you do EKS, you probably have Prometheus and operate all that stuff on your own. So you don't have to pay $30, 30 cents per month per metric, but still you have a lot of data probably useless data coming in, so probably also not very helpful. But that's interesting here. So I think the observability feature that they promise here is probably not very useful at the moment because it's way too expensive in probably most situations, because who wants to pay that much money just for... This is just two services. I assume that this goes even up if you add... for each service that you add to the thing. Okay. So that's observability. So I think there is a lot of room for improvement here for the future. Cool. So let's see. The next thing is, by the way, the X-ray integration. So as far as I could tell from my just testing, I don't have any production workload running on it, right? That's where it gets interesting. But from my testing and examples, X-ray integration seems to be working fine. And I think there we don't have any issues that I could indicate.
Yeah, so maybe I just, because you mentioned production workload, so I remember one tweet that you sent out, the Twitter vote kind of tweet, where you ask if there's anyone out there using AppMesh in production, and it turns out that not that many people are using it already. So at least that's from your poll. It's not that.
Yeah, I think it was in the low one-digit numbers that people are using or even have tried that service. So, yeah, I think it's early days for App Mesh and for service meshes on AWS. Okay, let's go further. So the next thing I want to talk about is encrypting data in transit. So I mentioned that AppMesh comes with the possibility that you configure TLS encrypted connections between your microservices, and you can even have policies in place that enforce that specific services can only talk to each other over a TLS encrypted connection. And for that, you need certificates to be able to establish trust. By the way, what's interesting here, Michael, that's something I think about right now, is I remember discussions about the network security on AWS, and I remember the discussion always was, in a VPC, you should encrypt the traffic, but you don't need certificates to ensure that the sender is and the receiver are guaranteed. You only need a self-signed certificate for encryption. That's what I remember from a discussion about network security in AWS, because they ensure that in a VPC, a network packet basically cannot be, the sender or the receiver cannot be made up, or I don't know how to
say it. I think it's called the authentication. So you don't need with TLS, you get authentication and you get encryption, and we don't need the authentication part because that's ensured by the VPC.
Yeah. So then I don't know actually why it's so important to have it here with certificates, but maybe it is to fulfill some additional security measurement. If you don't want to rely on that, maybe then you want to do it on your own, stuff like that. So, long introduction. So what is built in? So AppMesh comes with integration for the AWS Certificate Manager. And you all know AWS Certificate Manager from application load balancers because you can get a public TLS HTTPS certificate for free. That's what we probably all do all the time. It's very handy. You have that validation of the domain name with Route 53 or email or something, and you get that for free. But what AppMesh is doing here, because they need that certificate in your Envoy container running in your infrastructure, you cannot use the, and also because it's for internal networking, you cannot use the public certificates, right? Because there you cannot download the private key, basically, because that's only deployed to the load balancer, to the infrastructure operated by AWS. So here with AppMesh, we are using a different part of the certificate manager, which is a private CA, so a private certificate authority provided by AWS. And with that, you can basically have your own trust chain for the certificates. You have your own authority. You add it to your trust configuration in your operating system. And then you can sign certificates with that private certificate authority. The problem here is, again, I think the price tag, because a private certificate authority is $400 per month. So just to be able to use the TLS, built-in TLS with AppMesh, you pay $400 per month. I think that's also far beyond reasonable costs for just adding TLS encryption to your service mesh, right? The workaround is you can provide your own certificate. Self-signed certificate, probably the easiest thing here. And what we discussed before, because we are in a VPC, an AWS-controlled network, that might be enough. So then it's maybe not that big of a deal. But if you want to have that cool functionality where certificates get rotated automatically and all that stuff without you need deploying anything, then yeah, you don't get that. And also the problem will be, how do you bundle the certificate into the Envoy image? So then you need to build your own image and stuff like that. So it gets a little bit more complicated to use everything. So yeah, the easy way is expensive. That is what needs to be said about encryption data in transit. Any questions on that, Michael?
No, I don't think so. That's just like speculation. So I think like one thing that I could imagine why they need the authentication part of the TLS is if they do service-to-service authentication or things like this.
Yes, that would be great.
Would like to have
that. Yeah, that would be great, but unfortunately that's not supported yet. So that's on the list of missing features that we'll talk about at the end. Okay. So yes, you could use TLS certificates for authentication, service-to-service communication, but that's not yet in place. It's on their agenda. I think it's even something they are working on right now, at least what you can know from their public roadmap. But that's not yet implemented. Yeah, then it's important to have that certificate. That's correct. Okay, the next topic I want to talk is about deployment orchestration. So we have a service mesh now. That's fine. We can do crazy things. You can do canary deployments, route only a few percent of your traffic to a new node, which means maybe a new ECS service that you created to test if everything is working and so on, and then switch the complete traffic. That's really a really cool thing that is very easy to do, because you can change the configuration of your app mesh mesh very easily, and the Envoy proxy will stream that information in and then start routing requests to the new targets automatically. So that's a very cool thing you can do with a service mesh, is all kinds of different deployment strategies. Unfortunately, with ECS, you don't have any pre-built integration. There's no AWS service that supports deployment orchestration for App Mesh. So I would imagine that, I don't know, things like Code Pipeline, maybe Code Deploy, maybe CloudFormation will support that feature so that you can basically benefit from all of that to do canary deployments or stuff like that. When you use EKS, there is an open source project that is called Flagger. And this implements all kinds of deployment strategies for service meshes. And they support App Mesh as well. So if you have EKS, you can use that. I watched the reInvent talk from last year, and there the guy on stage said it was kind of hard to get everything working, but at the end they managed to achieve that. So probably also a little bit complicated to configure everything correctly, but that's an option if you use EKS, and there is no way to do that with ECS. I saw a talk of a technical evangelist from AWS, and he came up with a solution with step functions and basically implemented everything himself. That's cool, but probably nothing I want to do, just to build a deployment pipeline, and probably also very buggy and error prone at the beginning. So maybe not something you want to do. Yeah. So yeah, so that's definitely missing. Talking about missing features. So also I had a little bit of look into what is missing here, what I would expect from such a service. And one thing is what we already talked about is service to service authentication and authorization is not yet supported. So I want to make sure that only service A can talk to service B and other requests get a deny from the Envoy proxy. That's currently not in place. So Envoy supports rate limiting in general. So that would be helpful to make sure your service does not get overwhelmed with requests. But that is not supported with App Mesh at the moment. And it also seems to me, I couldn't find a way at least to configure the circuit breaker configuration. So with Envoy, you can configure exactly how this should work. And with App Mesh, it seems like we just get some default config that you have to live with.
Okay, that's interesting because I was running exactly into the service-to-service authentication missing problem as well when I investigated App Mesh for like an multi-account kind of setup, because I was trying to figure out if App Mesh is at the state where we can, like, if one team owns one account, the other team owns the other account, and we can, I mean, because you can span a mesh across multiple accounts, which is cool. I mean, it sounds cool, but in practice, it's not that cool because, I mean, if you have so many services, then you definitely want to make sure that they cannot talk to each other, like, just if they want to. You kind of want to, like a security group, open that and then allow it. And so, yeah, then I basically stopped looking into it because that doesn't seem to be ready. But as you said, it's on the roadmap and it's worked on. So, yeah, let's see how that progresses.
Yeah, I didn't have a look into the possibility to share or to span an App Mesh over multiple AWS accounts. I only read through the documentation. So what you basically do is you create a service mesh, and then you share the service mesh over there. Is it called the resource manager? How do they call that? The same thing that you do for...
Yeah, this...
So basically, yeah, you share the same resource with other AWS accounts, and then they can use, or they can see and use that same thing. So they can also create, for example, an App Mesh service and add it to the same service mesh. But I think the tricky part, it's what Michael describes, is the networking part. So how do you... then you need a network in two accounts that is somehow connected, and you also need to make sure that only traffic that is eligible to pass that boundaries goes by. How do you do that? And how do you do authentication between the services? Because then I don't want everything to talk with everything, probably. So yeah, I think there's something smithing if you really want to use that in a production and secure way.
Yeah, so the service is called Resource Access Manager, Andreas, so you forgot the access.
RAM.
Yeah, and I think it works in the same way that you also have to share the subnet and the VPC with the Resource Access Manager.
You can do that, yeah. You could have just one VPC and different accounts deploy in the same subnets, but then I don't know if that's really a good thing to do, but yeah, it's possible. You could also have VPCs and connect them with peering or transit gateways. Of course, that would work as well. But yeah, I'm a little bit skeptical. But yeah, but at least I think what you can see is they thought about that problem. It's already built in a little bit, so it will probably evolve over time. That's probably for sure. Yeah. Okay. So. Always important when you do a review of a service is talk about the pricing. So with App Mesh, it's not that interesting because it's free of charge. So we don't pay for using App Mesh. Besides, of course, you need to spin up the sidecar containers and you need some CPU memory resources for that. I thought about that a little bit. So is it really that good sign that you don't have to pay for the service? Because I'm always a little bit skeptical when AWS offers a service for free. Does the team then get enough support within Amazon to drive further development if they don't do any direct revenue? Do you know what I mean? So I'm always a little bit skeptical. So you see it with CloudFormation, maybe they don't do that much progress. Maybe it's because we don't pay for it. I don't know. It could be the problem. It's just maybe a small downside here. Yeah, of course it's cool that it's free. So,
But I have a similar kind of my opinion is similar. So, I mean, if the probably the biggest capitalist in the world offers something for free, then there could be something wrong with that. Yeah. So, not sure, but maybe they hope that all the integrations that you mentioned make enough money to justify the cost to develop this.
Yeah, of course, we also don't pay for ECS and so on. So, but yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's see. So, okay. So I'm coming to an end. So before I start, before I end, I want just to compare App Mesh with the maybe more traditional way of doing things, which is elastic load balancing. So the question is there really, does the benefits of App Mesh and all the ideas behind it really are so much better that you now want to use a bleeding edge service compared to a really good old traditional, really working application load balancer or network load balancer? And I try to compare the differences. So I think the most important difference is, sorry, Michael, you have a question.
One thing, so sorry. So the funny thing is that Andreas calls this the traditional setup. And I think a lot of companies would be very happy if they could call this their traditional setup. So okay. I think they are more traditional ways of doing it. But yeah, so in AWS terms.
In AWS world, it's traditional. Yeah, of course it's modern, but it's, so let's compare the two. So I think, what do you get from using App Mesh compared to using an application load balancer or network load balancer? That's my question here. So talking about observability. So with App Mesh, inbound and outbound requests go through Envoy, and Envoy basically is then tracking those requests, metrics, tracing, and so on. So that's something you do not get with an application load balancer. There you only get the inbound requests. You don't have any information about the outbound requests. With the network load balancer, you don't get basically any information besides there was a TCP connection happening. That's okay, probably not very helpful. Okay, so that's a difference. But on the other side, if you add X-Ray, if you integrate X-Ray into your microservice and just install it, or how do you call it, configure it and add it to the application, then you basically get the same thing, right? You get information about the outbound requests and metrics for that as well. So you could do that. Of course, you need to deploy something and to your own code and so on, but you can get it. Okay. High availability. I think that is what all provide. They all do health checks. They do. They can route requests to another availability zones and so on. With fault tolerance, you probably have a little bit of advantages with App Mesh because it does retries. There's a circuit breaker in place, stuff like that. With an application load balancer, if the application load balancer cannot reach the target, it will just return a 500. So there you need to have client-side code to fix that. There are a lot of libraries that do so, but that's maybe not optimal here.
That's one of my biggest wishes for the application load balancer, why they cannot integrate retries on the load balancer. It would be so helpful because at least the browsers that I know, they don't retry if it doesn't work. So they just fail. That would be great if you could have that in application load balancers. Yeah,
absolutely. So intercompatibility. So App Mesh works, as I said, with ECS, ECS, AKS, also with Fargate. The load balancers do the same. Besides, they also work on-premise. So you can point an application load balancer to something in your on-premise network. That's something you cannot do with App Mesh at the moment. We talked about resource efficiency. So I think it's maybe not the best thing to deploy three additional sidecar containers for your service mesh to get everything up and running. So that is maybe interesting. From a cost perspective, of course, you don't have to pay for the load balancer. So for each application load balancer, network load balancer, you pay an hourly fee. You pay for the traffic. That is something you don't pay additional when you use App Mesh. And last but not least, maybe talk about the latency. So I thought about that a little bit. So basically, what does it mean to use App Mesh from a latency point of view? So let's consider service A talks to service B, sends a request to service B. So what does it mean with App Mesh? With App Mesh, the request goes out, it goes through Envoy, then Envoy sends it to the Envoy of service B, Envoy processes it again, and then sends it to the container of service B. So you have zero additional network hops because those two services talk directly to each other. But we have two additional I would call it request processings, because the request has to be processed two additional times. So Envoy needs to have a look into the request two times. With an application load balancer, if you have service A in between application load balancer and then service B, we have one additional network hop, because the request goes to the application load balancer, which then forwards it to service B. And then also the application load balancer needs to inspect that HTTP request. So we also have one additional request processing here. And then I thought, what happens with the network load balancer from a latency perspective? So I think there are zero additional network hops, because as so far I understand the network load balancer, that it really operates on the abstraction layer of the VPC network, I would say. So that's how I would describe it. And there is also no additional request processing, because no one looks into the HTTP request here. It's just a network load balancer. So I think from a latency perspective, the network load balancer should provide even lower latency than using AppMesh. That's just what I think. I haven't measured it, but that's just from the concepts behind what I would expect.
Yeah, so that's also how I would, like, my mental model of how things work are exactly the same.
Yeah, so from a latency thing, it should be network load balancer, app mesh, and then application load balancer. So that should be the order. Okay, Michael. So last but not least, so when we do a service review, we always do calculate our so-called maturity score for the AWS service. So the maturity score takes into consideration different criteria, stuff like feature completeness, is there CloudFormation and Terraform support available, does it integrate with AWS Config, with CloudTrail, is it available in all regions, is there an SLA for it, does AWS provide any compliance certificates like SOC or HIPAA, stuff like that. And then we use all of that information and then calculate maturity score. And there is a service maturity table that gives you a little bit of overview of that. You can find that in the blog post that comes along with this podcast episode. You will find a link in the show notes. I don't think it's useful to go over that in the podcast now. Check it out. Overall, I've calculated a service maturity score for AWS AppMesh of 4.7 on a scale from 0 to 10. So this is, yeah, this is in the lower range of the service reviews that we have been doing. So I would say it's maybe not already time to use AppMesh on a production scale project where it's really important to have everything in place and on a production readiness.
Yeah, so basically this means that if you are using AppMesh, you will experience some like problems. You will run into features that are missing. So that's kind of what the number says. I mean, you still can use it, of course. And if you like using stuff that's like half baked, then that's a good service. But yeah, it will not be a convenient option where everything works out of the box.
Yeah, you can say it's the bleeding edge, and it probably bleeds. So that's probably the thing. Yeah. So overall, let me summarize what we have been talking through. I think AppMesh provides service mesh for EC2, ECS, and AKS, and it's for free, and it works. So I've tested it. Everything was up and running. Everything worked fine. So I like that. It integrates with a lot of AWS services. We talked about the pros and cons about that. I think AppMesh is a new service. It's still at the very beginning, so it's interesting to see how this will evolve over time. We can already see that AWS is working on that. So, for example, the virtual gateway that I talked about at the beginning was just released, I think, a few weeks or months ago. So it seems like they are really working on that thing. So there will be definitely improvements over time. I think one of the fundamental problems is that it's not a fully managed service. So personally, I'm not a big fan of operating anything myself in my cluster, because I'm happy when everything is managed by AWS and I just care about my business logic and the thing that really matters, that brings the money in, basically. So I don't like having all that stuff operated that on my own. So that is definitely something that I think AWS should work on, that we can get rid of those additional sidecar containers. The thing with the CloudWatch metrics and the high costs also for the private CA yeah, it makes those features less useful, in my opinion. So I would say, yeah, App Mesh is really, if you really want to dive into the hot new stuff, so if you want to really have a service mesh in place, and if that's something you enjoy, then App Mesh is definitely interesting to have a look at. But I think if you want to have something rock solid that just works out of the box, then it's a little bit too early to get started with App Mesh.
Yeah, and I think, Andreas, you really, like, you internalize the AWS marketing promise, like, they get rid of, or they take care of the heavy lifting. And I think they can do better here. So there's a lot of heavy lifting that needs to be done. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to see how the service evolves. And, I guess we have to revisit it in 1 or 2 years, where it really improved a lot. So thank you very much. So this really sounds like a lot of work, Andreas, and getting everything thorted out here for us and presented us in a way that, at least for me, was understandable. So much appreciated. Is there anything left besides the usual mentions of how people can send us feedback?
No, Michael, but I think that is important. So if you enjoyed that podcast episode, please send us your feedback. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, send us a message on Twitter or LinkedIn. You will find all that information in the show notes. And also don't miss the blog post that covers the same topics that we have been going through. And last but not least, please recommend this podcast to a friend. That would help us very much. So thanks a lot for listening. And Michael, we speak in 2 weeks.
Yeah, thank you very much. Talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.